You're listening to the Movie Crew Podcast. Tonight we talk about Carol Reed's The Third Man.
You no trouble. Me, fifth element. Supreme being.
You will be a weapon. You will be a minister of death, praying for war. But until that day, you are cute. Sound off like you got a bear.
Yes, I was wondering what would break first. Your spirit or your money?
You get nothing. You lose. Good day, sir.
God is dead.
The city is headed for a disaster of biblical proportion.
What do you mean, biblical?
What he means is Old Testament,
yes.
Mr. Mayor. Real wrath of God type stuff.
Dead.
Fire and brimstone coming down from the skies. Rivers and seas boiling.
40 years of darkness, earthquakes, volcanoes, the dead rising from the grave.
Human sacrifice, dogs and cats living together. Mass hysteria.
Welcome to the podcast, the Movie Crew Podcast, Movie Makers Talking Movies. We're your hosts. I'm editor Brian Elkins. With me here tonight, cinematographer Jared Kellen.
How you doing, Brian?
I'm good. I'm good. You all right there, Jared?
Well, it's pronounced Callaway, but I'm English, not Irish.
Oh, I'm sorry. We don't want to get our islands mixed up that are right beside each other. And we also have with us the director of photography, Mike Griggs.
Yo.
That was the exact opposite of British, and I'm a little shocked by it.
Well, you know, this movie has so much of it in there already. Question mark?
Does it?
And we also have with us costume designer Kristen Jones.
Hello, hello.
Hey, and here we are.
Speak English? Sorry.
What? What, Jared? What?
I said speak English. Continue. I'm sorry.
Oh, my gosh. Here we are talking about the 1949 film noir. What was this, the number one film on the British Film Institute's list of the best
really?
British movie? That's right.
The best
Man.
British film noir or best British movie?
I think it was the... Oh, I'd have to go look it up now because I don't have this open in front of me like a jackass.
I know it's made the top like 50, 100 movies of all time at one time. And then, you
really?
Know, it is, yeah, at a certain point, you know.
Well, I did think it was interesting that it depends on which country you're looking at, because like I think Austria like does not care about this movie at all.
That's shocking. Yeah.
Really? I think, you know, it's kind of like a nice time capsule. I would say that's probably the best thing about the movie. It's like seeing the city and its time and place.
Time capsule is an interesting word for it. It is really interesting to see how many of the locations they're like running around actual fucked up Vienna, it looks like
which is incredible.
It is
In Austria it says local critics were underwhelmed. The film ran only for a few weeks. They said it had a not too logical plot.
Well, they probably didn't see the first two men before they saw the third man.
Yeah.
It says, who's William Cook wrote, in Britain, it's a thriller about friendship and betrayal. In Vienna, it's a tragedy about Austria's troubled relationship with its past.
Huh.
Interesting.
You know, they're kind of right about the plot. The plot doesn't make any fucking sense at all.
And another quote says, Carol, next time you make a picture, just put it on top of the camera, will you?
What?
I love the camera work. I love the lighting. Some of the dialogue's great, but you're right. The fucking, you know, the plot. I just kept rewinding scenes and then getting halfway through going like, what?
Really?
What is actually happening again? Like, it took me a few times to get, I had trouble feeling like I was getting into this movie because I was like, I don't know what's happening. I don't know why we're here. Why is he even here? And then he just happened. Okay, it's cool.
Okay,
he shows up for some reason, and then you know his friend is dead. He's supposed to stay with, and it throws him in this thing that happens. And I was like, okay, as long as I get that, And that's probably wrong, right?
Okay, good.
I get the movie.
I watched the movie and I enjoyed it, but I was like, what's happening? And I actually looked up the synopsis and I was like, yeah, well, that happened. But like, yes. Did I see all of it though?
You're exactly right. And I didn't feel like the movie really took off until fucking Orson Welles pops up. You're like, oh, okay,
all right. Yes, the top billed
cast.
Something
interesting. It
didn't show up until the final fucking act of the movie.
Which is fine. Yeah. That's okay with me. But like, you know, I was like, okay. So things started to get interesting at that point.
The first act was a good setup. The second act dragged so fucking much, man. It was really dying in the middle, but. I also like most of the dialogue was unintelligible, and I was like,
"Really?"
I felt like I was following the entire movie, and I heard like 30% of the dialogue, and I didn't feel like that mattered actually to the plot, because nothing that seemed to be happening, like I didn't ever have like a wait, who is this supposed to be? Oh wait, where are they supposed to be going? Right, there were no details that I felt like I missed ever in this movie without hearing much of the dialogue.
I did feel like the scenes to get to the point of the scene was a little long.
Yeah.
You know, like okay, I instantly get what the scene's about, but we got another minute or two before we can like get out of this scene. I felt that a little bit, but yet again, in my brain, I'm also thinking older movie, this is fine. And looking at all the pretty images and the clothing, you got things to look at, which is nice.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was bored. I thought it moved pretty quick. I thought all the scenes like happened really fast. It's just when you stop to think about it, and like the minute Orson Welles shows up in the movie, the whole movie falls apart. You're following around Orson Welles' two co-conspirators that planned a crime with him when Orson Welles' buddy, Joseph Cotton, comes into town, is under the guise that he's going to be employed by Orson Welles. Nobody tells him that Orson Welles is fucking alive, and he goes and gets the cops, and like just because they didn't tell this guy that Orson Welles is still alive, They brought down their entire criminal empire. It's
holy shit. That makes no sense when you put it like that.
It's the dumbest fucking thing in the world. Like the minute Orson Welles shows up in the movie, it's just like, wait a minute, you can't just talk to him and what? What the
hey,
fuck
bro,
is
let's
happening?
Bring you in on this shit, you know?
Yeah, like why were his buddies not telling him that? Like why do they have to wait all the way to that Ferris wheel scene to where like he's like, hey, you go tell Harry, I'm gonna be over here. And the guys are like,
throw
oh, shit.
Your ass out of this thing.
Yeah. And it's just like, why would you not tell him that Harry's alive before that? He's his closest fucking friend.
I mean, we don't know that, though. Not up until this point, we don't. I do think it's nice to see some loyalty in movies and people who don't have to just tell everybody everything. Like, you know, if somebody shows up to town and it's like, I'm actually his best friend. And they're like, oh, well, let me tell you his life
story.
No.
He didn't show up to town. He was invited and
promised
work.
He was coming to
stay
with him.
Yeah. And then I mean, like, I understand, like, oh, shit happens and you gotta, like, you know, fake your death and everything. But,
Right. Come on. Like,
get a message to the dude that you invited into town. Especially when everybody else but Orson Welles' character knows.
Okay, but do you really think that he, like, I feel like a big part of the reason that he goes to the police and, like, all of this happens is because he falls in love with the girlfriend.
I think that's why he
has nothing to do with him looking for his friend. He's like, let me make sure this dude's dead. Let me impress this lady.
Well, if he knew that the guy was, you know, alive, he wouldn't have gone to the cops. He would never have gone to that girl in the first place. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, he was trying to figure out what the fuck happened to his friend because it seems like everybody's kind of hiding something.
Or being very blasé about it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the first time that we meet the Baron dude, like, that whole fucking scene is, like, shot Dutch angle, and, like, he's, like, underlit, and his makeup makes him look almost clownish. Like, he looks kind of evil in that
very
cafe
sinister.
Scene. Yeah. So, like, there's the movie is giving the audience, at least, all of the implications of none of this is okay, and none of these people are trustworthy.
And everything they say to him is a lie, and there's these really extended... Like, you know, where they're speaking another language and he's just like, you know, what did they say?
I loved those parts. And honestly, that's the reason why I didn't feel like I was missing anything when I couldn't understand the English, where I'm like, they're clearly like fucking around with language and people not being able to understand and counting on you to at least have enough information visually that you don't have to get all the dialogue. And I felt that way the entire movie and it never proved me wrong. So I was like, well, that's actually well executed.
I don't know. Did you think the movie was funny? Did you hear any of the jokes?
Some of them, but most of the time I wasn't laughing because, like, oh, that's hilarious. It was more like, this is supposed to be funny. Ha 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 ha.
Yeah, comedy is a little weak.
I was going to say, I appreciated the lighthearted tone of this one.
Especially the score.
It I was going to say, is the score the reason why you feel like it had a lighthearted tone?
Yes. That is exactly why.
There were so many moments where it was like, I don't know what I'm supposed to be feeling right now because the score is saying that this is a happy, fun thing. But what's happening on screen is like rough.
Oh, I did read that they picked the score because it was melancholic, and I don't feel like that was accurate at all.
No, that's not melancholy. No, it was way more plucky and fun than it should have been.
Yeah, it reminded me of like a Woody Allen or Wes Anderson.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Quirky in a way.
Yeah.
Quirky is a good word for it. It was too quirky for the seriousness that everything else felt like it was being treated with.
Yeah, but when Orson Welles shows up and he smiles like that, you're like, you know, there's the lightheartedness of that. He doesn't feel the weight of the situation at all. He's like, fuck, I'm dead. What do I got to deal with it for, man? I'm just living my life, bro. Y'all deal with it. Bye. Tell my old lady I said what's up, you know.
It is hard though, because the story is very dark, and it is bizarre, especially when you get to the end of the movie.
Yeah, what the fuck?
Like running around the sewers to the dun 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 dun. It was just like, what? Is this like a Looney Tunes?
That bit was too long. They did the, you know, go in one door, come out the other, almost, you know, straight out of fucking Scooby-Doo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. It's just like, and then I was like, wait, this is the climax of this serious movie, but yeah. Am I supposed to
even
be
though it looks
here?
Cool. I love all the sets and all the stuff. That stuff looks great.
Oh,
and,
no, yeah. It looks terrific.
I'm like, how did they light this? How are they all not dead? You know, dragging all these lights and stuff through all this water.
Through all the water.
Yeah.
I did love seeing them running around the old city, like the busted ass shit and like all the rubble and stuff. It looks, yeah. The visuals in this movie are really, really, really great. Jared, did it bother you how many canted angles there were?
It's very noticeable, but it was on purpose.
Was it? I want to talk about this because every time I saw a canted angle, I was like, well, when they first introduce it with like the Baron guy, it was like, okay, this guy's supposed to be a little bit off. This is, he's clearly lying and we're trying to tell that visually. Interesting. There were so many other times where they're like throwing a canted angle in just to fit two characters in a scene when they could have literally just had it be normal. And
yeah,
they didn't
trying to
do
make
things
you feel
with it.
Uneasy. In those
really?
Situations, because yeah, he's coming into these odd situations, and you're supposed to be feeling how.
But they're like
feeling.
Building like street shots sometimes, like where they're just like,
the
let's do a canted angle,
up, bro.
And but then the next shot and the shot before it are also fine. So it's like, let's just throw a couple in here and there. Like it felt like there was some understanding of why it's normally used, and then just it became the 1949 version of Battlefield Earth, where the director's just like,
AC...
let's do it all in every shot.
The AC didn't know how to bubble the head. Yeah, just through the camera.
That's the problem.
Yeah.
I don't think the canted angles are that bad. I mean, they're nowhere near like fucking Battlefield Earth, where like everything is just like, you know, you get a crink in your neck from just like, oh, yeah. I need to turn my head to the left so I can see the frame straight. No, I don't think it's that bad. I think it actually kind of works for the most part. And I like what they do with the blocking, with like people like hovering over. Somebody can be sitting down and still have the position of power. That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I actually liked it. I thought it kind of showed you that nothing is really straightforward and nothing makes sense. It was it was a nice visual way of seeing that you can't trust anybody, really.
You can't even trust the city.
Yeah. Because you don't
interesting.
Need...
Yeah, no, interesting. That's kind of really where I was struggling with it, was like it became so overused, especially in the last third, that I was like, is it still supposed to be what it's usually supposed to be? Or did they just like decide that all of this shit is fucked up? And so like now we're going to have all these canted angles. Yeah, maybe it was just because I was looking for interesting things like that. Because so much of the movie is so incredibly well composed. There are so many shots where I'm like, holy shit, that's cool. Holy shit, that was cool. Like the third shot of the movie when he's walking into the dude's apartment building, and like you have that staircase and he walks up the stairs and then you kind of track with him for a second and then he walks and just where the way the camera moves in this movie is really, really well executed that it stood out to me that the Canton angles felt so out of place. Maybe that was the point.
It's not for everybody. You know, everybody's got their preference. But yeah, I mean, fucking photography is photography and sets and costumes, like all the technical stuff, I think is flawless in this movie. It's just,
oh, absolutely.
It's a shame. Yeah. It's a really terrible script. And everybody's calling this like the greatest movie ever made. And I'm like, motherfuckers, have you watched fucking Casablanca? Like, come on. What the fuck? Eat this movie's lunch for breakfast. Yeah, what? That didn't even make sense, but you get the idea.
Yeah, and it was also way before this, too. Or, right?
Yeah.
Way after?
No. This before. It's
Casablanca was
early
this.
40s.
Oh, okay.
This is late 40s, right? Early 40s. Okay, yeah.
Correct.
Still after Citizen Kane, though.
Citizen Kane was after, or was before this?
Yeah.
40, 41, 40, something like
Holy
that.
Holy shit.
Yeah. Somewhere in between 39 and 40.
He was like in his 20s.
Or is it Wells?
Yeah. I guess, admittedly, I don't know much about him or his like overall timeline, history, etc. But
that's why he's a cocky little.
He is
little,
a cocky
little,
motherfucker.
Little
in this
cunt
movie.
In this. Excuse
yeah.
me. But you know, it's a British film. yeah, that's why he shows up. He's like and apparently he was a total dick on set. You know,
like
most of the time you see him in this, it isn't him. It's body double stuff.
Are you serious?
Yes.
I saw that too, where Orson Welles refused to go into the sewer because he was
everything's a set that he's in when you see him.
Yeah, I don't
stinks
know about
down there.
Because I don't know, like the only time that I was like really wondering if that was him or not was when they're shooting the back of him and he's in that small little tunnel that's like completely submerged in the water and the catwalks are above it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And they look down, and you see him, like, running away. You see the back of him. That was the only time I was like, oh, well, that's a body double. And there was another time where in that big, giant cavern area where, like, the sewer really opens up. I don't know. It's huge. It's the big area of the sewer.
Yeah, yeah.
And there's a scene where he's, like, running off in the distance. But that's, like, the only time you see the back of his head. I was like, so are the whole catacombs, or are these all sets?
That's a lot of water, and especially with the stuff he's walking through. It's like, how do they build that? That's crazy.
There's no way.
That should look great.
Their whole budget went to that.
I know, right? There's no way.
Yeah.
I don't know, maybe.
Stupid actors. Just get down there and say your lines. Get in the hole.
It's water. I'm going to get wet. It's wet everywhere.
It stinks down there, Brian. It stinks.
That's right. Diseases. Rats.
Well, actually, the one guy said, it smells sweet, doesn't it? You know?
that was a nice little non-reference to like, yeah, they're in the sewers. He's trying to make a joke about it. Okay, cool.
Sure does smell like farts down here.
I love the spiral staircases that they open up to get down into the sewer. That's so badass.
Oh, yeah, and the fucking, how the manhole opens is wonky as well.
No, it opens up like it's a missile silo. You know? Yeah.
Little flower petals.
Yeah. It's incredible. Or like the box in The Mummy, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
The box in The Mummy.
The key,
yeah.
Yep, same thing.
Okay, I'm glad we really painted that visual image for everybody. We lost everyone until we... Oh, the key from The Mummy! Oh! Oh, and we brought up earlier on the show, I did find it. It's the British Film Institute. They voted The Third Man the greatest British film of all time.
What?
Of all time.
This one? When did they vote that? Like
that was
1952?
That was 1999 that list came out.
Fuck off. Are you serious? They don't think anything better came out since then?
Well, IMDb's top 50 British films are... We're gonna start in one and go through 50. Now, Lawrence of Arabia, which is, and then Red Shoes,
Way
Clockwork Orange,
this.
Brief
Jesus.
Encounter, Barry Lyndon, then The Third Man.
Are you serious? What's number under six. Third Man on that list?
Train Spotting, then Don't Look Now, Dr. Zhivago, Remains of the Day, Repulsion.
Yeah, they love that's some David Lean, don't they?
Yeah, that's Jesus. Your top 10.
Well, I haven't seen most of
them. Wait, did you see Repulsion?
Yeah.
Repulsion?
1965, Repulsion.
That's a Polanski film.
Was he not allowed to be on the list?
Well, how is that a fucking British movie?
Did he make it in the UK? Is that how they're counting that? because then Star Wars would mostly count. I mean, come on.
I don't know about that list.
It says, the storyline says, in London.
Oh, so it's just any movie that takes place in London. We can have a Polish filmmaker and, oh my gosh, a French lead actress. Okay, yeah, all right. Great British film.
And actually, it says country of origin, United Kingdom, right here.
Really? Is this the same Repulsion? Roman Polanski?
Yes.
I don't know. I don't know about that.
It was done by Compton Films and Telke British Productions. Bow down to the IMDb, Brian. It actually knows what it's talking about.
British money. Talent from abroad. I don't know if Britain would... Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, moving on.
We'll cover that when we get to Sex Offender Month.
What?
Well, we'll throw that in there. We'll throw a Ram Polanski movie in there with the guy that did Jeepers Creepers.
Yeah, we'll do Jeepers Creepers, Woody Allen, and...
oh, wait, hold on. Woody Allen is not convicted, all right?
Oh, my God.
you got to do ones that are actually, you know, went to jail or, you know, fled.
How do we separate
the
art from the artist? Welcome to the Movie Career Podcast.
Today we're talking about Lewis Carroll.
Oh, my God.
I love those Narnia books.
That's C.S. Lewis.
Whatever.
That was a mental leap that I just enjoyed so much. Thank you for that, Brian.
Didn't that motherfucker do something too? I don't know.
He became hardcore Christian after being atheist. Oh, that's the big thing.
Same difference, you know.
Yeah. He wrote all these books and was like, holy shit, God is real.
They do exist.
The M&M's commercial?
Yes, that is the reference we are off track here.
Let's watch the trailer.
Well, what are we talking about here? Let's see those two men, or the third one, whatever.
Oh, my gosh. All right, so we're going to take a break. Obviously, we need it. We're going to play the trailer for Carol Reed. The third man.
Carol.
Guys, Coral. I don't do names. Why don't you guys do the names today? Guys.
Third man, hated by 1,000 men,
desired by 1 woman.
The third man, hanging is too good for him.
Nothing is too good for the third man.
Her man was the third man.
The man on every woman's lips.
Vienna, 1950, a city fearful of its present, uncertain of its future. Vienna, the once gay capital of a light-hearted people. Here in the shadows of its palaces and ruins is told with tenderness, drama, and suspense the story of the third man.
There was a third man there. I suppose that doesn't sound peculiar to you.
I'm not interested in whether a racketeer like Lyme was killed by his friends or by an accident. The only important thing is that he's dead.
Third Man, the story of two men and one woman caught in the dangerous web of an international love affair.
Oh, please, for heaven's sake, stop making him in your image. Harry was real. He wasn't just your friend and my lover.
No, I don't know. I'm just a hack writer who drinks too much and falls in love with girls. You?
Me?
Don't be such a fool, of course.
The third man. Joseph Cotten in his most successful performance as an American caught in a whirlpool of continental intrigue. The glamorous Valley is the mysterious Viennese actress who knew the secret of the third man.
We're back. That was the trailer for Carol Reed's
The Third Man.
God, that might have been the most heavy-handed narration trailer shit that I've heard ever.
We swear it's his best acting ever.
Most successful role. What does that mean?
No, man, these old trailers, they got to give you a little beef on the actual actors and stuff and lean into all that.
Never has he shown up to set as many times on time as he did for this movie.
The third what? Man.
I like the lady of announcer trailer VO. That was great. Yeah. It's nice to have a different perspective.
Her perspective. Ooh, this man. This
the third man. Man. This third
man. Oh my goodness. That was a rough trailer. But I think that trailer.
That's why I drink.
I think that trailer points out like some of the tonal issues with this movie. Like,
yes,
what is this supposed to be? Are we supposed to like take this as a lighthearted romp, or is this supposed to be? Because like the music and the photography are on opposite ends of the spectrum, and the story is like kind of in the middle. It's got some comedy in it, but it's mostly serious. And it's like, what? How am I supposed to feel and parse this shit out?
Trying to look up how many strings a zither has, because it looks like it's over 20. Between 29 and 38 strings, with 34 or 35 being most typical.
That's a lot of strings.
I like that opening shot of the zither.
You know, oh, yeah, the credits on, like, the strings looking like they're fucking lines that are just vibrating. It's a dope shot. Like, that's fantastic. Yeah.
That stuff's cool, but, you know, they're just setting tone instantly. Like, look at this ridiculous guitar. It has way too many strings.
Are they setting tone? Because they go right after that to like a VO where it's like, yes, here in Vienna, we are doing terrible things because we are poor. War is bad. All of us are criminals now because of war.
Yeah, but this is just how things are. Yeah.
It's like, oh, hey, did you guys see the zither? It was awesome.
Listen to it. It sounds really
cool. Oh, wait. I had someone else to tell you about. Wait. Here it is. And now I'm going to tell you about the guy. Yeah, it was a very weird, like, narration intro thing that never came back.
No!
Like, who is this person that's talking?
No
Why
idea.
Do we care about the story that they want to tell us? And like, oh, hang on, let me tell you. Here's this thing that happened. Why do we need that? Why?
It's just like something about noir films, older films, you got to have the narration. There was one we just did recently. The one was about the racetrack.
The killing,
at fucking useless narration. Like, just take it out. We don't need it.
I like the narration better in this than in The Killing.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Yeah, because this only popped up once.
And it wasn't, like, just setting up the scene and, like, trying to give you, like, motivational, like...
Yeah, let's tell you the entire scene before the scene starts. Yeah. Or we could just watch it. Like, what? It felt like the opening VO felt like they had a certain amount of, like, information that they needed to give us. But they only had enough like stock footage of the city to be able to do like part of it. So they're like, what if we just like write this thing that we can then do like these random ass inserts that will feel totally different than the stock footage and just cut between them and, you know, just write something. Ah, who's going to say it? I don't know. Just say it.
It is weird to start off with like, I don't know, VO from a third party, somebody you think you're going to meet later in the movie.
Yeah,
because you know it's not the actual writer, the Joseph Cotton's character in the movie, because the guy's talking about him in third person, and it's not about Harry Lime because he mentions Harry Lime again, third person. So who the fuck is this supposed to be? And it's not any of the police people because he's talking about like, oh yeah, we had to steal shit off the streets and.
It's the narrator of the book. He says I'm gonna write a book called The Third Man. You know, it's. Based on actual events.
Wait, no, but that would be Joseph Cotton's character.
Yeah.
And it can't be him. That's what I'm saying. It makes no sense.
The narrator starts in a first-person perspective. I'm going to tell you about this thing that happened. But we never meet them in the entire movie. The narration never comes back.
You don't have to. Why can't the narrator be a character? It doesn't have to be somebody in the movie.
Shakespeare, bro.
Give me a bookend. Like, give me some kind of, like, wrap-up where the narrator's like, see, I told you it was fucking weird, right? Like,
that's
I mean...
fair. There is no bookend, but it doesn't have to be a character in it. That's not common. You can have a narrator that stands on its own.
No, but usually when you do stuff like that, it's like a fairy tale or, like, you know, or it is like The Killing and we just have this constant narrator that's just constantly telling us everything that's happening. Or it's a character that we're getting their inner dialogue from. This is just
I don't even know. It's just like
it's just a setup. It's a prologue kind of like little thing.
Yeah.
It's
read by
it's
some
like
random
the Canton angles. It's like, hey, here's this thing that's going to help us like once or twice, but then we're going to use it again and not know why. Except for this case, they're just not going to use it again, and we don't know why. Is this just like before these kinds of like movie rules are understood and like, I don't want to say written, but like widely used? Are movies like this the reason why we now in 2024 have an understanding of give me more of this narration because it's fucking weird? Do they just not realize this back then? Like 50 years into movie making, they're like, you know what? We should try a voiceover.
Yeah, I think they are trying to figure things out. I mean, you know, put things in perspective. This is only like, what, 30 years away or what is this? Like 40 some years away from the first close up. So, you know, put it in that perspective. Sure. They're trying to figure out, like, how do we tell this story? How do we set the audience up? How do we, if you don't know Vienna and post World War II and that Russia, yeah, France, yeah, and Britain and the United States all have their own little section here and the city is closed off, how do you get all that information without just spitballing it out? Yeah, right?
You put a newsreel up.
That's the same thing, Jared.
Different excuses for the same thing.
1949.
No. The Nazi war machine moves on.
No, I did appreciate the setup, actually. Like, I had high hopes because of the setup. Like, the whole, there's four different sections, and then we have the international part in the middle, and there's four cops that are thing. I thought that was going to come back and be more, like, impactful to the story. Like, oh no, this person is over there in the wrong section or something. And the closest that we got was, what's her name, not wanting to go back to the Russian section. Like, that was the only thing that they kind of did with that.
Well, the whole time she had the fake passport, you know, that was the looming thing of being, you know,
yeah,
arrested.
I mean, to be fair, those were the stakes of the movie of if she doesn't get her shit figured out, then she has to get deported or whatever and go back to
Russia
somewhere, I guess.
Love is really dead. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't understand the Anna character at all.
You didn't understand her motivations. You didn't understand what she was
doing. You think
that
she should have jumped into his arms instead of like walking away at the end?
Man,
Kristen,
I lost all respect for her. When she's got some stupid ass fucking line when Joseph Cotton's character comes in, like after he finds out that you know, his buddy Harry has actually been murdering people by, you know, diluting penicillin and shit. And he's
not,
like,
and children too.
Yeah.
Like just, yeah.
And he's
yeah.
processing that. And he goes to her apartment and like, he finds out that she knows what Harry did. And she's got some stupid fucking line where she says something like, it's something along the lines of like, what a person does doesn't change them. I'm just like, what? That's exactly what it means, you stupid bitch.
What
the fuck?
What?
Somebody please shoot this fucking idiot right now. Oh, my God. Like, what the hell? And then at the end of the movie, she's sitting in that fucking, she gets off the train car, and she's like, oh, well, I don't love him anymore, but I can't get him out of my life. And I'm just like, shut the fuck up. Oh, my God. Somebody murder you. Oh, my God. You are the worst character. You are so dumb. She's like, oh, this director must really hate actors. Because you notice her character was an actor, too. Just like, we're just going to make all the actors idiots. But I thought she was the worst character. I just hated her. Just hated her.
Wait, I mean, I didn't hate her. I feel like there's a lot of idiot people who, once they fall in love, they suddenly no longer care about anything the other person has done. I think that tracks, Brian. I think this is a known thing about falling in love with somebody.
I don't know.
That's
you know,
that's true. That's true.
When you come home, you know, after a hard day's work, and your wife's like, "Hey, what did you do today?" Oh, just murdered some children.
I mean,
like,
not directly.
Right?
It was just
like that's
because
not,
of my actions.
I feel
actions,
like he was
but,
like,
you know,
"Hey, I feel like the way he would have spun that for her was, "Oh, I made money, so now we can like eat in here."
Yeah. What do you think Anakin told Padme? He's like, "Look, I'm just taking care of business. You know, the younglings had to go,
honey." While
because,
we're on
I
this
mean,
Ferris wheel, look down at all the dots. I killed a lot of those dots today.
No, he's like, look, how many could you kill before it really like got to you? You know, just a couple dots down there. I'll give you 20,000 apiece, bro.
It's a lot of fucking money in 1949.
I mean, that is an interesting question, and that is sort of the question of, especially during wartime, of, you know, that's like the most common argument of, like, well, I'm not really killing people. I'm killing dots. Yeah. I'm killing, you know, a blip on a screen. I'm not actually doing this. It's a way of dissociating people. It's not, it's way different according to, you know, these people. And then walking up and, like, you know, sticking your knife in someone's gut, like you're not actually killing people. And I did think that was a really interesting question. I appreciated that scene a lot.
I wish the movie had spent a little bit more energy, like, exploring that side of things, because I feel like there could have been some amount, and this is where the script really is what is at fault. There could have been some amount of, like, I don't know, tension between these two guys of talking about knowing each other for, like, over 20 years. They've been longtime friends. Like, once it comes down to it, their actual relationship between those two main guys, we don't get to see much of it. We don't get to see much beyond, like, you were supposed to be friends with me and now you want to kill me? What the fuck, dude? Like, why are you being weird?
Yeah, then we could actually get the really hardcore, like, Heat ending, you know?
Yeah.
I think that's kind of what they were expecting, honestly. Yeah. I think it's the music throws everything off and the attempts at humor.
Didn't they cut out, like, 18 minutes for American audiences because it was...
Really?
Was it too depressing? Or was there something? There was some reason they were, like, American.
Give me the
audiences.
Depressing version of this. What the hell?
Yeah. I don't appreciate it. So they cut. Yeah, they cut 18 minutes, but I don't know what was in it.
18 minutes is a long time for this movie. It's already
just that last
2 hours.
Shot was, like, really long, where she's really walking down the she's just really
okay. All right. I thought that the entire time that shot was happening, I was like, this is so fucking stupid. She's gonna walk up and she's gonna,
no.
Like,
you thought she was gonna jump in his arms, bro. You had come on.
The second she just walks past without ever, like, turning to look at him, I was like,
yes. I
worth
agree.
Every second of that walk up. Absolutely. Thank you for doing that to me. Yes.
I really didn't think she was going to jump in his arms, like, at all, but I still, like, there's always that.
I thought,
like,
there was going to be something.
There's always, yeah, like something, like a conversation, a look, a glance, but no, nothing. And I was like, oh, yeah. That's nice.
That was sublime.
There goes that bookend we wanted. Cause see, in the
she
beginning.
Walked right past me. Yeah. And here I am deciding to make this. It's me. I'm the narrator from the beginning. Do you remember?
Well, you made it this far.
Give me something!
I liked that it was just nothing.
Yeah.
No, anything that he would have said at that point in time, I would have been like, stop talking. No.
100%, yeah.
Which is, I don't know. I do have a problem with the movie. Joseph Cotton's character is supposed to be like a bad guy for shooting fucking Orson Welles' character. Like, fuck that. Like,
really? He's supposed to be a bad guy for that? I don't see him being a bad guy for
that. Isn't that how the movie kind of portrays it? Like he betrayed his friend? And that's why the girl doesn't end up with him, right?
Yeah, she's still in love with him, though. That's why she doesn't... Come on.
What?
She's not going
to
be like,
the girl didn't end up with him because she never needed to end up with him in the first place. And that was one of the best parts of this movie, is that they were like... They had this interaction between... female lead and male lead, and they're like, oh, will they, won't they, fuck you, they won't. And that's what the movie needed to be, and they actually, that was one of the best parts of this thing. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
because a lot of times those things just feel like they're thrown in there because we have to have this like,
exactly,
little love interest, you know, and it didn't really make sense in this point. Just because two people, you know, in a weird crisis thing fall together doesn't necessarily mean that they're gonna, you know.
Just because he gives you attention does not mean you need to fall in love with him. Damn.
Well, and just because your main love interest fell away doesn't mean you need another one.
There you go.
Like, you got a rebound, Kristen.
I guess you're here, so you'll do. No, you don't. No, you don't.
No, no, you don't. I don't. No, actually, you don't.
Joseph Cotton's character was a little bit of a drunk, so, you know. I mean, you have
a
to.
Not
bit.
That much.
Yeah, you have to.
He's always turning down. He's like, I don't need your drinks.
Whatever. He gets drunk every fucking day. Bro,
hey, whoa, just because you have a drink every day doesn't make you an alcoholic.
He gets drunk in the middle of the day and then, like, two scenes later is completely sober. That drove me crazy.
Could just process, man. Just process it.
Processed it that quick? He's like, yeah. Oh, man.
I mean, that was like an hour and a half later.
Well, if he is an alcoholic, then he can probably handle it. So he can still be very drunk.
What?
Like,
no, he... missed that fucking sergeant
what is it, Sergeant Payne? Fucking knocked him out. Punched him in the face. Dude couldn't stand up.
He was trashed at that point, yeah.
And then the next scene, he is standing up by himself, totally fine, talking to the porter at the hotel.
Yeah. Well, there's been some time.
Do you need a dentist for your tooth? No, someone hit me. Ha 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 ha. The music gives us that a lot, actually.
But I appreciated that. Like, you know, it's still suspenseful. I'm still following the story, and I'm still like, what's going to happen? But, like, it doesn't have to be all dramatic all the time.
It wasn't suspenseful, though.
I mean,
that end was super weak sauce. It was like Looney Tunes. I mean, or like, what was it? Scooby-Doo. That's what you said, Jerry. Yeah.
It was very Scooby-Doo.
It was so Scooby-Doo, I started laughing at that shit.
but I liked that. Like, why does everything have to be so, just because you're committing terrible crimes? Like, so why can't we?
If you're doing Scooby-Doo, you don't end with, like, your best friend shooting another dude and him giving him, like, go ahead, bro.
He gives him the go-ahead. He's like, it's fine, I get it. I'm never climbing this shit.
And then he comes out from the sewer in that backlit shot, looking all fucking scary and shit. Just like, oh, man, has this guy lost his fucking humanity? I don't even know, bro. Get out of here. What? Fucking so terrible.
Yes, yes. Thank you. God damn, thank you.
I hated it.
Oh, man.
The music destroyed this movie. I'm sorry. It did.
It kind of did. I had to stop fucking reading reviews because they were fucking aggravating the shit out of me. I was actually getting pissed reading them. They're like, this music is the best thing. You know, film scores.
What movie were you watching? What?
No. Speaking of ridiculous, what's up with nurse hats? Anybody? Like, what is that about? Do you know what I'm talking about?
No reference. What are we talking about?
You don't remember where they go in and they're talking about all the fucking the vaccines or whatever, and people are in beds and there's fucking nurses walking around and they've got these fucking hats on and they kind of flare out and they're big and they're floppy and it's kind of like in between like a fucking habit, but like we're going ridiculous with it. And why do nurses have to wear stupid hats? Didn't notice this? It took me completely out of the scene. I was like, what is this hat?
No, that's what they used to look like. I don't know why. But I know I know there was an overlap of nurses and nuns, but I don't think that's why the hats are that way.
I just think it's like even, you know, if you think a sexy nurse, they got this stupid little small, kind of curls in kind of hat, kind of like it's like a sailor hat.
Those are like relatively recent, like 70s and 80s level recent.
Oh, this is 1949 and they've got the fucking flying nun,
correct.
Fucking like weird hat.
Okay, so hold on. Let me open this up.
I just think that's silly. Maybe it makes you feel better when you're like laying in bed dying and you're like, look at that stupid hat.
Okay, you know, like, so
it's like a morale thing.
The reason they have the long hat was because it was able to keep the nurse's hair up and out of her face. And it says they were really developed during the Victorian era. And I don't know if you guys know this, but during the Victorian era, long hair, like down to your knees, was like very common. So they had a lot of hair and that's probably why the hats were so big.
Yeah, but it's just stupid. And it flaps when they're walking. It's just a bad design. It just looks silly.
And it also says the frillier and longer, the more senior the nurse.
Oh, old big hat coming in the room. Everybody shut up.
Works that way in church, too.
But overall, that was the only really visually stupid thing that I saw.
I mean, that's saying a lot. There's a lot of great visuals in this movie, especially all the staircases.
Stairs, shadows, fucking foreground elements, all of it. The lens choices, all that stuff's really great. The only technical thing that I really didn't like was... there's some bad sound.
Really? Which part of bad sound?
Just like you hear the mics change or someone's completely off mic, you know, sure. You'll hear them like they'll go to, they'll get off mic, you know, but you know, it is what it is.
I appreciated the use of sound in like the catacombs tunnel area thing. Like all those Scooby-Doo shots where they're showing like the echoing sound where he's like, which one do I go in? They're all coming from all the things. That
moment,
was a great fucking moment.
I actually liked that moment. And that's when that scene quits getting stupid. Like, you know, it starts to wrap up.
Finally
he's having a panic
stakes
moment.
To it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then that one like super compressed shot from like really high angle where you see the guys coming in through the left and he's going down the tunnel in the middle of the shot and you like you just see all the shit like stacked right there. There are some great shots.
I mean, it's what is it? Orson Welles' introduction, his character introduction is fucking amazing when they go through the bushes on the fucking, or I guess, what is it, plants or I don't know, whatever it is on the windowsill. Some kind of greenery.
And the random, like, is it, I don't know why the light coming from that window is so bright, but it like, you know, lights
across the
big.
Fucking street, just yeah, lights yeah, up like some a lady, perfect like, opened slash up a, right on him.
Yeah.
And he's like, and then when she hello, closes, like, yeah. Hey, you've turned the light on. I see you up there. His goofy little smile.
It's very theatrical, but, you know, that's quintessential shot from this. And then also him, like, looking up at the grate, you know. The shot of that grate bugs me. When
what?
He sticks his fingers up
the
through
fingers
the grate.
The fingers through the grate? You don't
I
like that?
Awesome. I think that's incredible. I think that's incredible. But it doesn't match because he's trying to push out of it. So when you look at the fingers up, they're all extended.
They're all like,
they're
just like, let me give like, fingers
like,
through
like,
the grate.
Like, oh, I'm doing scary fingers.
Yeah.
You know, and like when he should be like gripping him, trying to like push up. But that's what he's doing in the acting bit. And when you go underneath, he's actually trying to like he's trying to push out of it. But when it cuts, it doesn't match because he's like, oh, look, magic fingers. And then, you know, and then the other one's like tight grip.
Yeah, probably because so that if his fingers weren't up, it wouldn't look cool, Jared. Damn, fuck.
No, I instantly thought, oh, that's some fucking director going, okay, now open your fingers. I'm like, well, that doesn't really match.
Magic
doesn't matter,
fingers.
Looks great. But yeah, magic fingers, like spirit fingers.
I would
spirit
imagine that it's less about, like, doesn't match and more like, hey, this is what I think this shot is supposed to be. And then they put the two of them together in the cut and they're like, oh, shit, he was doing a totally different thing. Oh, well, we shot the wrong one.
No, I think that's just the director's like, I want to see your fingers like reaching up, you know, like they're, you know, I don't know. It's still a cool shot, but it didn't match.
But they could be like on totally different days and he's like not thinking about it. And there's not like a continuity person there that to say like, hey.
No one tells Orson Welles how to act.
Exactly.
Bro.
That's
like,
what I'm saying.
I do like, it. He's like, I know what I did, lady. Get away.
That was definitely not Orson Welles' fingers coming up through that grate. That was 100%.
Oh, you don't think so?
Fuck no. Absolutely not. Why would that be his fingers?
It's probably not his fingers, too.
He shows up to set to what, put his fingers through a fucking grate? Like, nah.
He's off drinking wine somewhere. No, he's eating champagne.
Oh, man. Shooting another commercial.
Here I am as the most interesting person in the world.
Yeah, I mean, come on. The directing and the photography are not this movie's problems.
Nope.
Some of the performances are pretty good. Orson Welles is really good. And I love all the British soldiers. They're all great.
Yeah. Every time Orson Welles has a little speech, you know, he goes off in his shit. Those are really great moments. Most of the dialogue doesn't land like that, but those are really strong.
It's because Orson Welles wrote some of that stuff in the Ferris
wheel.
Really?
That makes sense.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah, I was wondering if, like, was that another bit that was supposed to be, like, a comedic thing where he was like, oh, I get heartburn. These American antacids are the only thing that really stop it. You know, these Europeans, they don't know how to make antacids here. And then it was constantly like belching and like hitting his stomach the entire time. It's like, is that supposed to be funny or does he just need something to do?
He's a cold-hearted killer, bro. And maybe they're like, you know, that's him. He worries about it so much, you know, on the inside. It's eating away at him. So
that's the way I read it.
Oh, that's reaching. Yeah. I appreciate that.
It's reaching.
He's a cold killer. It's eating him alive on the inside. His stomach acid is tearing him apart.
Yeah, I also got there, Jared.
Sure, I'll take it.
There you go. It's just character development.
Sure.
And maybe it was so new that they were just like, some writer was like, you know what we should talk about?
You know, if we drop the brand names Tums, we can get some extra money from a sponsor.
Nah, it feels like one of those things that happened to someone like in the crew, and they were like, you know what, we should put this in.
Exactly. That's how I read it, for sure.
They're just eating nothing but spaghetti constantly, and everybody's got heartburn.
I bet you the food would be pretty badass. You know, you got all those, you know, international cuisines there. You got a little bit of Russia, a little France.
I mean, I feel like you can't just, like, pop over to the Russian Quarter for dinner.
That's something I would have liked to have seen in this movie. Like, you never really get to see anybody go from
more
one
of that world-building stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. Why do we spend so much time in the beginning establishing that and then not actually do any of the like multicultural nature of it?
That was actually one of the things that I was a little confused on, and maybe I just wasn't paying attention. But when she didn't have her papers, I was like, is she just getting deported to the Russian side or to Russia? Like, where is she going?
Yeah, I also felt that.
They said Russia.
But also, like, because they said that, like, you couldn't easily go in between all the quarters, right? Like, I mean, even just getting exiled to a different quarter, I feel like, could potentially be terrible.
Orson Welles doesn't care.
No, he doesn't.
He can move freely between everything. He knows the path down the sewer. Actually, they kind of ruined that because they kind of set up that sewer earlier, and it seems like that's a cool way for him to, like, get away and, you know, all of that, but it seems like it just makes a big circle, so you're not really going
anywhere. Does, yeah. They had so many fucking shots of manhole things where, like, the guys were coming into it and he's running up into it. That is where it felt very Scooby-Doo. Also, were all of those, like, soldier people coming in with the white outfits, was that, like, a 1940s hazmat suit, or was that literally just their uniform? And they're like, oh, shit, we got to go in the sewer. All right, get the plastic versions of our stuff, guys.
I assumed it was some sort of hazmat suit. I don't really know, though. I mean, it wasn't their normal fatigues that they were wearing throughout the rest of the movie. So,
right.
Yeah. Anybody got anything else? Well, it seems like we are at ratings. Who's going first? Who is rating The Third Man?
I'm going to come out hard with it and just give it an 8. I think that's pretty good for this. I mean, people talk about this film. If you look this film up, everybody's like, oh my God, this film is incredible. It has like fucking high ratings and everything. And that's just because it has Orson Welles in it. I think it won best cinematography at the Oscars, right?
It did.
It had some Oscar wins. So, which I get all that, but looking at it, it's a little fucking confusing when you're trying to like follow it, you know, and the tone is off. It's a little weird. But overall, I'm glad I watched it. You know, it's cool. I haven't seen much Orson Welles stuff, even though he's barely in it. But it's kind of cool. You know, it's enjoyable. I, you know, probably won't watch it again. But yeah, it's an 8.
An 8. All right. So in real ratings, that sounded like a 4 to me. Who's going next?
Wow.
Rating is a 4.
Real ratings. Wow. I was also leaning towards an 8 because I also appreciated the vast majority of the cinematography. Like, there were so many shots in this film that I was like, holy crap, that's an amazing shot. Like, I love how it starts, I love how it ends, I love the frame, I love the composition. Like, there's so much visually interesting stuff to look at in this film that it was totally worth watching. I was not familiar with it as, like, an infamous film noir thing, so I'm glad to appreciate it just for what it is, but I think this movie doesn't quite know what it needs to be. The score fucks it up for me, like, from the jump. Like, I'm like, the tone is wrong based on the score alone. If I muted the movie and just watched it visually, I think I could, like, imagine most of the story and probably, like, score for myself in my brain and probably be a pretty interesting movie. That being said, that's not the way it actually goes. There are parts of it that are confusing and unintelligible, and I liked the way that the movie leans into the differences in language, and I feel like most of the weak parts in this film could be perhaps generously explained by that same sort of let's lean into the language that you don't understand. I think there are parts of this movie that are trying to do things that are in different languages that sometimes the audience will not always understand, or maybe the filmmakers don't always understand what they're trying to do. There's a lot of great stuff in this. There's a lot of great things that they're trying to do. I don't think all of it lands the way they maybe wanted it to, or maybe the way that I, as a person who is way, way after this movie, expects things to be, because maybe it's of its time. I don't know. I'm going to give it a 7. I think it was really, really fucking solid. But there are just parts that drag. And I think some of that is the script. Some of that is the edit pacing. There were too many scenes in this film where I was like, okay, I got it. Like, let's move on. But I loved all the visuals. I loved seeing old Vienna. I liked the disparities between the international zones. I thought some of the characterizations, like the Baron, was really interesting. I like how the Baron and the guy that he was lovers with were like just very obviously like together. That maybe that again is a modern perspective, and people back in 1949 were like, they must be really good friends. But like, there's literally a shot where they're on the balcony and then they walk away. Like, he puts his hand on his back and then like kind of rubs it a little bit. I'm like, so gay, so wonderful. Look at you guys. Just be who you are. Way to go, 1949. Orson Welles is overblown. I think he's used to smelling his own farts at this point in his career, and that comes through his character, and maybe it's not supposed to be like that, but he comes off as an asshole, and he's supposed to be an asshole, and I kind of enjoy that, but also maybe a little overhyped. Yeah. Overall, glad I watched it. Seven.
All right, 8 and 7. Kristen, you going next or you going last?
Yeah, I can go next. I enjoyed this movie. I think it does have some issues, but overall, I absolutely loved the visuals. I loved looking at Vienna. I loved the costumes. I don't particularly enjoy 40s costumes, but I actually think this movie did it so perfectly. Everything was just, it was just so nice to look at, including, you know, and the hair and the makeup and all of this. You know, I don't think anything necessarily stood out because it all works so well together, and the whole movie as a whole is just brilliant to look at. I didn't mind the camera angles, although maybe slightly overdone, but I didn't mind them. I thought the whole language and not understanding was an interesting dimension to film noir, where you don't really understand what's happening anyway, and everyone's lying to each other. Now they're just doing it in other languages, and you really don't understand. And so I thought that was a really interesting layer. I also enjoyed the score. I get what you guys are saying, but I don't mind the tone being ambiguous. And I think it's actually very interesting to, and I think the way, it's the way kind of that people were kind of forced to live when, you know, they're going through something so dark, and you try and find something lighthearted because you have to keep going, right? And so I think this movie kind of strikes that tone, and it can be unsettling. And but I think that's more interesting, because you can't stay in something so dark for so long. Like, the human experience, just, you just can't handle it.
Yeah.
And so I thought all of it worked together really well. But I do get what you guys are saying. Like, I do get the Scooby-Doo part of it. But also, you know, I liked it. We didn't mention, I don't think, the cat, who had a little cameo, and that was...
The cat was fucking great.
Amazing. Anyway, even though after I finished... I did finish watching this movie, and I was like, what happened? I think I missed the whole movie. I did enjoy it. I would love to watch it again. I'm going to give it a 10.
A 10?
Holy shit, Kristen.
All right. Yeah. Coming in with the British Film Institute there. All right.
Yeah. It was shocking to me, too. Yeah.
I guess I'm going to, I don't know. I'm going to come in like a 6, maybe a 7. I don't know. The photography's strong. All the technical stuff is really well done. It's the story and the music. And some of the acting is shockingly bad. Like, just really... for a movie that should be, like, the best British film of all time. Like, who the fuck put that list together? Were they smoking fucking crack? Like, what the fuck? Like, don't you like to watch movies where you can understand the fucking plot? Like, I mean, it doesn't have to have, like, a A to B plot.
Orson Welles in it, bro.
A lot of movies have Orson Welles in it that also suck, Jerry. He's made a lot of movies.
That's true.
I think what you're confusing Orson Welles' love with is his directing efforts, you know, like Lady from Shanghai, you know, Citizen Kane, obviously, you know, things like that, Touch of Evil, the ones where, you know, he also directed and wrote or co-wrote. I mean, he's fine in this movie. It's a glorified cameo, pretty much. He's got like two scenes.
Yeah.
That movie makes no fucking sense. I mean, the plot, it's just, when you stop and think about what characters are doing, why they're doing them, it just completely falls apart. It's fine while you're watching it, but the minute the movie is over, it
just like, why were people doing this? And it's not like one of those, it's not like thrillers and film noirs where you can explain it away where it's like, well, these characters are not communicating correctly, or this character didn't show up on time, so they didn't have this piece of information. This is like, everybody has the information except for Joseph Cotton's character. Everyone has the fucking info. Like, why they're not communicating and talking and getting themselves caught by police, I don't know, but it's stupid. It's like, yes, these people all deserve to be thrown in jail and shot because they're idiots, not because they're criminals. They're just stupid. I mean, like,
it's the ultimate movie terrible.
It's so dumb.
They're stupid.
And Joseph Cotton's character, like, I don't really care about him. You know, he's an alcoholic writer. I feel like the movie wants me to get on board with him and be like, well, he's portraying his friend. This is a big deal. And he's having a lot of problems with it. And it's like, well, once we go to the hospital and we're seeing he's killing kids, it's like, well, no, okay, that's right. Fuck Orson Welles' character. We can take Harry Lime out into the back and just shoot him. Fuck him. Who cares? Why do we care? Why should I care as the audience? Like, I don't give a fuck about this dude and the writer. Fuck, I don't care about him. The moment where I got the most emotional impact was when the sergeant, fucking M from James Bond, Bernard Lee, when he gets shot and falls over. It's like, oh, damn, fuck. That was the only time where I felt like, oh, this is emotional stakes.
Yeah, actual stakes.
We're doing something here, and I'm like actually caring about what we're doing. The rest of these people, I don't know why I don't care about them. It's not because they're doing bad things. It's just they're kind of boring characters. They're just one note. They don't change that much, and they're just kind of stupid. I don't know. That's what I'm having the problems with. Screenwriting. And the script is so bad, and this movie is so beloved. Yeah, I'm coming at a 6. Like, this is way overvalued, way overhyped.
Well, this atmospheric thriller is one of the undisputed masterpieces of cinema.
Undisputed.
And boasts iconic performances from Joseph Cotton and Orson Welles.
It's a pretty movie.
Rotten Tomatoes brings in The Third Man with a 99% tomato meter. With a 93% popcorn meter.
10.
Fucking classic. Absolute fucking classic. But Liam N says the choice for music is baffling. It really takes you out of the movie. I agree. So people are out there saying what we're saying, but you know,
it's still a classic. Still one of the, if not the greatest British film of all time.
Yeah, IMDb's top 6 British film of all time.
Jesus.
Now that also includes all of Alfred Hitchcock's movies. So you know.
You're right.
What are we talking about?
No. Inaccurate.
Yeah. Film Noir Month kind of broke my heart a little bit. I was going in with the best intentions. It's like, oh, man, this is going to be great. I'm just going to love this. It's going to be so awesome.
I was also very excited.
And I'm still excited. I had a great time.
We still got one more.
Really? This and Double Indemnity, to be classics like they are, it's just like, why are these held up so? I don't know. Anyway, it's me. It's not them.
What are we ending the month with there, Brian?
I think we. This ends our month, I think. I think we're going into Halloween.
I thought there was one more.
Well, we were going to do On a Lonely Place, but I don't know if we have time.
Yeah. We'd have to get that out by Monday.
Oh, yeah. That's not going to happen.
Well, that's not
yeah.
Happen. Oh, wait. Because, Mike, have you heard about October?
No.
Oh, Mike.
No,
we'll talk about it after we run.
Oh, no, we're going to do all the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Oh, my God, we're going to do all the Texas Chainsaw Massacre movies.
Wait,
all
I mean it.
Oh.
There's 11.
That's so crazy that I have completely booked until November. That's wild.
Actually,
that I
just completely booked until November, too. But.
No, look, Jared is going to give us his best cannibal recipes, right? This is how you cook human flesh.
Well, cool, you cool, really cool, pretty cool, much cool, treat cool, cool. Like human as pork.
Oh,
so in any pork, it's kind of like deer with lamb. You know, any of those recipes are interchangeable.
Okay, so
I'll watch the first one just so I can finally see the original and then be terrified for the rest of my life. And then I'll just be unavailable for the rest of the month. That's what's about to happen.
It's
I'm sorry. Is Texas Chainsaw Massacre about cannibals?
What?
Yes.
Come on.
What
Kristen.
Do you think they're doing with all those dead
unfamiliar.
People? They're going to eat
thought,
them.
You got to eat them.
I thought he just. I thought he had a chainsaw and he just like killed a bunch of people.
He's just like, get off my lawn.
There's also
yeah,
like
that's what I thought.
Well, there's also some like making things out of skin and stuff.
Wait, like, do they do clothes or like what are we talking?
Oh, and he
about
also
here?
Likes to display
oh,
no. people.
It, we're talking about everything. Like his mask is made of human flesh. There's like
lampshades.
His furniture is made with
my mom
cones
right
and
now.
Stuff. Oh, it's. But yeah, it's like crazy.
There you go. I'm just.
So wait, so he's not like massacring people. This is about like the after.
He's a masochist.
Oh no, you get all of
no,
it.
No, yeah, you get you. Yeah, you got to chase
Even
your food down
in on it.
And then
yeah.
eat your food, and you know that's. That's what we're doing here.
They tried to sell
also,
it
it's like
to
a
me,
paleo diet.
Yeah.
Mike, because
oh, yeah, it's
Matthew
the ultimate
McConaughey diet, and Renee Zellweger have one. And they were like, see, Kristen, there's something for everyone.
That's right. Matthew McConaughey, Renee all right, Zellweger.
All right.
Yeah. Come on. You're dazed and confused with Jerry Maguire in Texas. Come on. Am I right? No. All right.
And apparently Bridget Jones's Diary is actually the Necronomicon.
Mic drop. So with that, you've been listening to the Movie Crew Podcast. If you want to get in touch with us, you can do so by sending us email to moviecrewpod@gmail.com. You can also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram at Movie Crew Pod. Jared, where can the audience follow you?
You can follow me on Instagram at Check the Gate.
Griggs, where can they follow you?
I'm on Instagram at Griggsy Media. That's G-R-I-G-G-S-Y Media.
And Kristen, where can they follow you?
You can follow me on Instagram at Kristen Magdalene. That's Kristen with a K and an I.
You guys can find me on Twitter at Elkins Edits. And we're going to close out the show tonight with, I don't know, what are we going to do? I don't have the soundtrack. We're going to do the main titles because I'll just rip those out because there's no talking under those, right? 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 Yeah. So, yeah, we'll play the main titles. Enjoy.